This is Kate Moorhead Carroll in the podcast Find It and the Class. I have with me Meg Sachs, who is the Communications Director at the Episcopal School of Jacksonville. Is that your official title?
I'm actually the Director of Marketing and Communications.
Marketing. That's very important.
At Episcopal School of Jacksonville.
And we are going to talk today about how to establish a media diet. And that may be a new phrase for you. I made that up. I figure we are generally, as Americans, fairly well informed about food because we've had food all of our lives and for all of human history. So most Americans kind of know what's healthy to eat and what's not healthy to eat. We may not always do the right thing. We may not make the right choices, but we generally know that eating, you know, a pound of potato chips may not be very good for us. And eating, you know, fish and vegetables is good. So most of us have established some sort of parameters for ourselves around the diet of our food. But when it comes to the media has recently come upon us with a great speed, and it's still changing so rapidly that all I know as a parent, and now my kids are in their 20s, but I didn't know what the cell phone really even was, and I didn't know how to triage it or parent it. I'm trying to figure out how much media can I take in and what kind. So today Meg is going to take us through a presentation of the different kinds of social media platforms that are out there and why they were created and what they tell us that we need to know about. Meg, why is it, do you think, that we are so ill-informed about all this stuff?
I think there's a lot of research that shows that when social media first started, when smartphones first started, that everyone thought, this is all amazing and I can have all this information at the tips of my fingers and I can connect with people, but nobody started to look at the downsides. It took a while for people to even realize there were downsides. I would say probably between like 2010 and 2016. Then we get into COVID and everyone is isolated and social media becomes a lifeline. But as we increasingly become politically divided, social media has become not as healthy as it used to be. And we are learning about the negative effects of social media in long-term studies that didn't exist before because it's such a new avenue for communication.
It's interesting how theologically we always think back to Adam and Eve taking that fruit, you know. We take this thing and we think, oh, it's going to be great. I'll have all this information. I'll be able to talk to everyone all the time. And taking everything you want is not always good for us, is it?
No, it isn't. No one should have 7 desserts and only chicken for dinner and 7 desserts. So I think the biggest thing I think I would like as a presenter for people to take away from this is that while it may feel like social media is in control of you, you are in fact control of it. You can say no, you can stop, you can delete it, you can, even if someone friends you and in high school they were mean to you and you don't want to be a friend with them on social media, don't accept their friend requests. You are in control. And that's something that I feel like in this world, a lot of times we feel like we don't have control, but this is one place, one avenue of your life where you really can control what you see and who you interact with. And that's really important because otherwise it becomes a tool that is not helpful and can be hurtful.
And Meg, we don't just have control about either doing it or not. It sounds like there's a lot of little controls within most of these platforms that we can kind of fine tune them to be what we want them to be. Is
exactly.
that right?
Exactly. There are, I would recommend if there aren't platforms you're on that you're interested in, make sure you read about the safety controls, the privacy controls, and even controlling the information that you are seeing, because on some of the platforms that is possible.
Great. So. Well, take us through some of these platforms. And of course, Meg, there are infinite amounts of platforms. Why did we pick these ones? Meg and I kind of chose them together, but could you explain?
I would say these that we're going to talk about are the most prolific. They have the most users, and they've been around the longest, in quotes, because none of them have really been around that long. But if you look at them also, the demographics are very different for each platform. So, for example, I have a 16-year-old and she loves Snapchat, which I think is just a waste of my time. But because she's on it, I'm on it because I don't want her to be on an app that I don't know how to use. So you have to look at, too, what kind of information they're sharing, how they're sharing it, and whether or not it's even a good fit for you. Even though I have accounts, some of that is for professional reasons, for work, because I want to know what's out there and what's useful. But some of it is also because I don't want my kids using it if I don't know how it works. So
that's a good piece of advice for parents, is to get on whatever platform your kids are on, so that you understand it.
Yeah, I would not let your child have a platform that you do not know how to use. And I make my kids give me, well, just my 16-year-old right now, the other three are too young, but I have all her passwords. And if she changes her password and doesn't tell me, I take her phone away. She's a good kid, we haven't had a problem, but just putting rules around social media. This book I was talking to Kate about earlier, called The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt. He was one of my professors in college, and his class was fantastic, but he's written a book about how we won't let kids walk to the grocery store and get us milk, but we let them on the internet with millions of people, and they have access to information that is really harmful to them depending on their age. So certainly with kids, you have a whole other level of control that you need to have with social media. So I'll start with what used to be called Twitter, and then Elon Musk bought it and it became X. This is a platform that for the most part is used by young men in their 20s and 30s, and it's a lot of it, I'm not going to read every stat up here, you can read that, but Twitter is very quick information. There is a word limit, you can provide links to news articles, and a lot of it is sports scores, I found. It can be news information, but it's also very quick, digestible information. So if you're looking for a forum that maybe has space for more thoughtful dialogue, Twitter/X is not it. You'll get 240 characters and then probably a link or a photo. And part of using social media thoughtfully is verifying where the information comes. And personally, I don't feel like Twitter or X gives you enough context, given the word limitations, for you to really vet whether or not that information is correct or useful. But you can follow different news outlets on Twitter. So if you're someone who doesn't want to read every newspaper every morning, you could have a Twitter account, follow many different news organizations, and then just read what they have posted on Twitter.
So like headlines, it would be like
headlines. Yes, you could do that. That might be useful in it that it is a time saver to just log in, see all the big news for the day. But also you have to take into consideration they're going to post the stuff that's going to get them the most clicks, that's going to make them the most money. So all of these things to keep in mind.
That is really important point that you're making there. In general, with the news, they want you to click, which means things are going to sound more frightening, more alarmist, more interesting in some way. They're trying to get your attention.
Yes, and headlines I always stay away from are headlines that have words in them like could, would, how, should, because those are all speculative. It's not a statement. The headline is not a statement.
That's very interesting.
So making sure you're reading even the words they're using in the headline, that's not news when you have could, should, would, how in the headline.
Another piece is that one of the darknesses of our age is that we have no time because we feel like we need to know everything and be everything and do everything, which causes simplicity because we want brevity. And simplicity doesn't get the complexity of reality. Simplicity makes us think in black and white and extreme tones, which the news tends to give us.
Yeah, and being on the other side of that, because I do media relations for Episcopal, and I've done it for CSX and other companies, the news is trying to make money, like most organizations, but they do have to simplify. Their goal is to get things up quickly and be the first one to share that information. And the nuances of so much of a news story are just not there, especially TV news websites. So I'm very careful when I'm reading the news. I tend to read organizations that have long, thoughtful pieces, more like The Atlantic or The Wall Street Journal, and get in depth and get into those nuances so that I am getting the full story and not just one side, quick, clickbait headline.
Thank you. Very helpful. Yeah.
So Facebook is one of the largest platforms in the world. There are 3 billion people on Facebook, which tells you how important privacy settings are when there are 3 billion people using the same platform you are.
Wow.
This is the first social media platform I joined back when I was in grad school. It hit my age group especially, and then as our kids grew up, everyone sort of migrated to Instagram. But there are very good things about Facebook. I will say there are specific interest groups you can find. For example, my youngest daughter loves riding her hobby horse. She loves riding horses, but I'm not buying her a horse. So she's really into her hobby horsing, and I have found groups on Facebook that tell me where to get hobby horses and what the rules are for hobby horse competitions. I mean, this is like really random stuff, right? So if there is something you're interested in, you can probably find a group on Facebook about that. And I think also, you know, a lot of schools use it for reunions, reaching out to their alumni, trying to put together a class group so that you will attend your reunion. So there are very positive things about Facebook. I would say the negative thing about Facebook is that it's much easier to be misled by information, because on Facebook you can post links to anything. You can share images that can be have been altered by AI or an artificial intelligence or, you know, Photoshop. And there's a lot more ads on Facebook than they used to be. So personally, I'm not as much of a fan as Facebook as I don't use it as much as I used to, because I have all this clutter of links I don't want to see, ads I don't want to see. I use it because I have those specific interest groups. I write for Jacksonville Mom. So Jacksonville Mom, the hobby horsing, and then some ballet groups I'm in for my other daughter. I am taking from Facebook the information that's useful to me, and I am not bothering with the rest of it anymore.
I also use Facebook because it is a way for me to see when people are having surgery, when it's their birthday, when they need something. So I find I can be a pastor. I can say, I'm so proud of you, or I'm praying for you. But I try to scroll through the ads. Is that what we do? How do we get less ads?
I don't know that you can get less ads. Every time I see an ad, I press the X in the upper right-hand corner over and over and over. And there are settings, if you wade through Facebook, where you can sort of tailor your ads more, but they're not going to go away.
Okay.
And originally when Facebook started, ads were not so much of a problem, but I feel like they've increasingly taken over the content, and I personally don't appreciate that.
The other thing that's dangerous for me about Facebook is it's a show-off platform.
Yes.
So people will say, look at my beautiful family, look at my beautiful this, and you're like, oh, I've had a crappy day, and you know, my kid's not talking to me, and then I see this perfect family, and it creates a sense of shame.
Yeah.
And also a lot of competition. Look at what they're doing, what am I doing? Look at what they're doing, what am I doing? And this myth, this idolatrous competition, is very dangerous.
And I think especially in mom culture, there's a real push to really show how it is. There are people who show their house a mess. There are people who talk about the bad days. So it really depends on, you know, if somebody is constantly posting things like that, it's very easy to either unfollow them. That does not mean you unfriend them. It just means you don't see their content. So make use of things like unfollow, or there's it's called a snooze button. You cannot see their posts for 30 days, which is very helpful during an election cycle, of people you want to stay friends with, but you don't want to see the content they're posting. So make use of the snooze and unfollow buttons for sure.
Okay.
And that's a good segue to Instagram, because Instagram is different than Facebook in that it is extremely visually heavy. And this is when we really start talking about comparisons, comparing oneself to other people. You cannot post, unlike Facebook where you can just post words and a link, you cannot post on Instagram without some form of image or video. And so especially with teenage girls, Instagram, and there are filters, there are photo filters that clean up photos that make you look amazing and beautiful and successful and whatever kind of filter you could want. And this is a platform especially dangerous to teenage girls because of the comparison thing.
Yeah, I mean, as you imagine, their self-identity is developing. They're trying to figure out who they are, and they can make themselves look prettier on that platform. That's right. Very dangerous because it makes them feel like their regular self is not beautiful.
Or not good enough.
Or not good enough, yeah.
But I would say that while there are ads on Instagram, they don't tend to be as often as Facebook. And what I like about Instagram is that I don't need to... You can share links in a certain part of Instagram, but in the main part, the main feed of Instagram, people are not posting political stories. They can't link to anything. So if there are opinion pieces or really like incendiary information that may not even be correct, you're not going to see any of that. You will see photos. And sometimes, you know, I follow the National Park Service. That is an account I highly recommend you follow if you're on Instagram. They post beautiful pictures of our country, and they also have a great sense of humor. Mm-hmm. So when you are choosing who to follow, make sure it's organizations that make you feel good, not bad.
Well, actually, yeah, because when you follow organizations that whose values you admire, you're endorsing them. You're giving them more power by your attention. Isn't that correct?
Yes. So the more someone likes something or shares it, the higher attention that gets from everybody else. So it would be wonderful if we all only focused on positive stories, because then all we would see would be positive information.
Interesting.
But we know the world doesn't work like that. So I'm going to go to the next one. Okay. TikTok is my least favorite. TikTok is a video platform. You post really quick, short videos. And this is another one I would argue is really unhealthy for teenagers, because you have all of these women and influencers talking about their wonderful trips and sharing what they look like. I could see how TikTok might be useful for certain things. I don't think it's useful as news information. You can see the demographic. Most of the people using it are teenagers and early 20s. So, and look at the average minutes per day. 53 minutes per day on TikTok. That's a lot of time.
Yeah, and let's pause for a minute. All the media platforms, all these social media platforms, I find myself drawn to Facebook. Like, I'll just have my phone like right before bed, and all of a sudden I'm looking at Facebook. How long have I been looking at it?
Right.
If you're going to get on social media, and I don't do this yet, but I would advise it, maybe part of a diet would be to determine beforehand, how much time would I like to be spending on social media per day, and then stick to that. It's going to take some discipline on our part, isn't it?
You could set an alarm on your phone to remind you.
That's
it's time
a great
to get
idea.
Off.
Yeah.
You can also, there are settings on your phone, and I'm not sure how to do this. I'd have to look it up, but you can set time limits on your phone for what apps get a certain amount of time, which especially works if you have kids playing games on your phone. But on social media, you could do that too. So I think being self-disciplined enough, these are all built to be addictive, to force you to encourage you to spend time on them, to get that dopamine hit, to be on them. And it takes a lot of conscious effort to just say, no, I'm not going to do this today.
Yeah, just like with those ice creams at night when I'm watching TV. We really do need a diet. Yeah.
So TikTok is very video-based. It's really something for young people. I mean, younger people are using it a lot. It does get high levels of engagement. There are a lot of ads on it because of that. So if you love short videos and that's all you want to watch, TikTok would be the place for you. But as far as I see, TikTok as much more of an entertainment app as opposed to an informative or useful app.
It's also a place where people with strong opinions can make a video of themselves screaming about whatever they feel strongly about, and that could get really disturbing very quickly.
Right, exactly. So you have to be very careful about, even if it starts out well, it may not end well, and there's no regulation necessarily about what people post, so. Snapchat is the world of the teenager.
The world of the teenager. I don't want to go there.
Snapchat is really short videos that you can take, and they get snapped out to your contacts or whomever you want to send it to them. So in a sense, it's like a text message, right? You can send a group text message, or you can send a group, or you can send a text message to one person, but with Snapchat, it's a video. So I think teens like it because it's just easy to use, right? And then the thing about Snapchat is the videos go away after 24 hours. So I mean, go away is, you know, we all know that everything is permanent on the internet, but that is their shtick, that if you don't watch it, it will go away. So you can see that mostly it's something that teenagers and kids in college are using. I would say if this is something that makes it easy to keep in touch with your family, because you get to see short little videos of your grandchildren, that might be useful. And then the videos disappear. However, you also might just want to get a text with that video. So Snapchat.
It's very appearance focused, though.
Yes, it
that's,
is.
That's, we often see teenagers doing selfies or, you know, yeah. And that's a lot of Snapchat, right?
Right.
And it's a lot about me, look what I'm doing, And again, focusing on me all the time in general is not healthy for emotional or spiritual wellness.
Right. And you could follow other organizations, but I think that with Snapchat, because everything disappears in 24 hours, you are encouraged to check it more often so that you don't miss anything.
Right.
So again, that's that addictive. The hook.
Check me.
Yes, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. Blue Sky is actually relatively new, and Kate mentioned this to me, and I had to do some research on it because it's not one I am too familiar with, but I did look it up, and it is developed as the counterpart to X/Twitter, especially in response to Elon Musk's purchase of it. The person who started this was at Twitter and left, and wanted to create a Twitter-like social media platform that had more controls about what content you saw and how positive the experience was. And so what I like about Blue Sky is that you can even put in words that you don't want to see. So, which could be good and bad, because we talked about how when you're getting news, you should be reading multiple different points of view and not just one. But if there are derogatory terms you don't want to see, you could put those into Blue Sky and it will never show you any information that includes a derogatory term. Mm-hmm. So I think in terms of controls, Blue Sky would be a good form. But again, it's relatively new, and so there's not a lot of longitudinal information about it yet.
My husband, as you know, is a doctor, but he was also an influencer on Twitter. Like CNN would call to interview him sometimes about children's illnesses, but he stopped Twitter and he's now on Blue Sky. And so far he says he likes it, but it's a good place for medical data people who want to share research and don't want a lot of the other politics and stuff.
Right. No, yeah. And that's good. And then they can include a link to their article or their journal.
Right.
So, I mean, the information sharing can be a wonderful world of resources, but we just need to be very careful on how we absorb that and take that information and how we use it. I think we have one more. Yeah, YouTube. So YouTube has been around a while. YouTube is... it's videos, and it's longer videos. You can watch certain people, and there's wonderful content on YouTube. You can watch full ballets on YouTube. You can learn about anything from cooking to, I mean, we bought a house, and we could not figure out how to turn on our our fireplace was a gas fireplace. We could not figure out how to turn it on, and my daughter looked it up on YouTube and found out how to turn it on. That's the teenager for you. But there's wonderful content on YouTube, and they're pretty good about trying to keep content, you know, clean. But I think that it's another thing that could suck you in for hours if you weren't careful. If you started watching one show about something, I mean, sometimes you can get TV shows, you can get, but they also have like Khan Academy, which is educational, and they're teaching you. You could learn a language on YouTube. You could learn sign language on YouTube. So I think YouTube is a little bit more, it reminds me in terms of function more of something like Google, where it could be a very useful resource to learn things. But again, you have to be careful that you're not clicking and then you go down this rabbit hole of all kinds of stuff that you never needed to see.
Exactly. So Meg, you do have one more after this.
Yeah, we have two more. So these are the cons, and I think we've touched on them. We don't have to read through all of them. Being even conscious and cognizant of what the effects are, even if you don't realize it, you need to start to be able to recognize them as you're using social media. And then, can you go to the next one? This is harder to read, and I'm sorry. It's smaller, and hopefully we can share this. But these are some things you can do. Oh, there's a typo. Whoops. Contains the wrong word, but to be more conscious of how you're using social media. So your privacy settings, rules like no devices during dinner, or I'm only going to use this on the weekend, turning off your notifications, that little red notification that comes up when you log into something is directly, I mean, there's research about how it is connected to a dopamine hit. Like, they know what they're doing. They're trying to get you to use this stuff. So,
turning off notifications is a good idea.
Yes, turning off notifications.
Don't let social media interrupt your life. That's a good premise.
That's
good
a great
premise.
Way to phrase it.
Yeah.
And then making sure you're following reputable sources, if you are, and then prioritizing the people. I mean, so much of this is wonderful because I can see my cousin's kids, and I can watch my family, you know, grow up, and I can look back in my memories on Facebook and see a picture of my son when he was a baby that I'd forgotten about. There are so many wonderful things about it, but I think in the end, it's up to us to make sure that we are controlling what we do on social media, and then we can take away only the positives from it.
So with money, most financial advisors will tell you, make a budget and mm-hmm. make your priorities evident in your budget. It's probably the same with media. Before you even get onto any platforms, you might want to pray about it and say to yourself, what do I want? Like Meg said, you can have wonderful connections with family and friends. Maybe that's one of your goals. I want to stay connected with my best friends from college and my cousins, and mm-hmm. or I want to, for me, be a pastor on Facebook. Some of your goals, and then establish a media diet based on those.
Yes, I think that's a great way to set it up. For example, my parents love to see pictures of their grandchildren, and my brother and my sister's in Italy, and my brother's in California, and I am in Florida. So they both have Instagram accounts. The only people they follow are me and my brother and my sister. So the only thing they see is pictures of their grandchildren. So you can be very specific and deliberate about choices you make on social media.
That's excellent. And tell us about the news. How do we figure out, you touched on it, you said it's good to be, and I really do believe this, it's good to watch a variety of platforms of news. How would someone gauge that? You said if someone just wanted brief headlines just to know basically what's going on in the world, X might be a good way to
do
it. What other suggestions did you make as people think about how they want to interact with the world, which has got trauma and beauty and just so much going on?
It's a quote, and I can't remember who said it, but reading widely, I think, is imperative to being informed, but also to being cognizant of the other side of things. So reading nonfiction, reading all kinds of newspapers, I think longer pieces like what The Atlantic does, or you know, more thorough, the magazine portions of like the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, that any media that has different political bents is always very helpful because you get different opinions and different sides of things. But the reality is, if you really want to be informed, that's not something you're going to be able to do with social media. You're going to really need to take the time to dive into a topic that you feel strongly about and make sure you have all of that information. And it feels good to get something quick and think you know something. I mean, I think that's sort of our fast food Amazon Prime society, but we've been conditioned to absorb things quickly and think we have the answer and think we know everything. But the reality is, if you're not reading widely and understanding different opinions and different sides, you really aren't informed.
One other good way to do it is in a discipleship group or a small group where your values are, or where you pray about stuff, to really talk about some of the things going on in the world and how you feel about them. So you're not just taking in, you're also processing and talking about. I think sometimes we get so full, like we're being fed, but we never can give out. Mm-hmm. And that gets unhealthy for us as
well. Yeah, and having other people's opinions about you both read the same thing, but you interpreted it completely differently. Mm-hmm. Small groups are a wonderful way to talk through that and work through what different opinions are that are out there. I always enjoy hearing how someone else saw something that we both read. Even a book club, even if you're reading fiction, people have different opinions about the story. So that's all very helpful. Community in processing this information is enormously helpful.
Thank you for joining me in this podcast. May God bless you and keep you always.